My name is Suzanne. I'm a grateful compulsive eater, and this is the Promises Workshop. I'll give a quick overview of what we would like to accomplish. We are going to share on the promises from the Big Book, and it's about steps 8 and 9. We will share a little bit on what they mean and how we have worked them in our life. We will then ask for a couple of people who would like to share on how the promises have worked for them. And then we will share on steps 8 and 9 from the 12 and 12, and we'll give practical examples on how to work those steps. We want this to be a little interactive, so after Sheila and I share, we'll have someone come up and briefly share on how the promises work for them. So, I'm Suzanne. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. I have been abstinent since April 6, 2003. I've given away 65 pounds. So I've been abstinent 10 years and a couple of months, and I'm a Food Inventory Step sponsor, and I am sponsored by a beautiful woman in these rooms who's been around a lot longer than I have, and I sponsor quite a few people. At least one of them is here today. And what was the other thing I was going to say? And I have done a couple other workshops, and I'm a delegate. I'm an intergroup rep. And I love doing service. And now I'd like to introduce Sheila.
Hi. Thank you, Suzanne. Okay. She didn't want to say how we got to know each
other. Oh, yes. I would like to say how we met. Sheila and I both do home bridge meetings. And I do face-to-face meetings. However, in the last few years, I've done more home bridge. It's been, for me, more practical for a number of reasons, and we met on the phone bridge. We never would have met. You know, she could have been here, I could have been here, and there are a lot of beautiful people here, but I don't get to meet everybody. So we met on the phone bridge, and I asked, this is why I wanted to share this. I asked Sheila if she wanted to do a workshop with me, because there are a lot of wonderful people who do workshops every year, you know, and I can now say I'm one of them because I did one last year. And I thought it would be great to bring in a new voice. Sheila is abstinent a little over a year, and I like to hear new, fresh voices on the steps and the Big Book. And I thought, what a wonderful way to bring in new people, new experiences. So I asked Sheila if she'd like to do this. You'd like to?
I would. Hi, my name is Sheila, and I'm a compulsive overeater, carbohydrate addict. Hi, everybody. And I was in program probably maybe 2.5, 3 years ago, and what happens, I started out in 12 steps. I started out years ago in the 70s. I did very well with that, and very, very active, very active. I believe that, you know, you get what you put into it. And I became active in that and did conventions up at the Catskill Mountains. I remember years ago, I'm originally from the East Coast, from Massachusetts, and I did that, and it was always a lot of fun. Such a high. It's a high. You come here to any of these, and it's such a high, and then you go home to normal life, and it's like, but anyways, but you take, you know, you take what you get, you know, with you. And then after, I got very involved. I was living in Tennessee at the time, and they had a lot of retreats and stuff. And I would go there and be part of their group and help set up and do things, you know, do different things for it too. And it was just, I just became very enmeshed in it. And did really great and everything. And then, unfortunately, I got cancer. And I had melanoma cancer. And then I kind of faded out from the 12-step program. And then after that, when I came back, I came back, you know, wandering, as I call it, wandering in the desert, you know, find this thing, or every time you get a magazine, oh, now what diet is going to work for me, because I want to be the winner, I don't want to be the loser, you know, I try everything, and then all of a sudden when I've lived different places, and I moved to Colorado, and I happened to be open up to have like those newspaper magazines you get like about, you know, where you live, Aurora, it's for us, it's the Aurora something, whatever. And I happen to be looking through it, and I see CEA Health. And I said, oh, I haven't tried that one. So I turned, right away, I turned it over, and I said, okay, God, I'm going to go. I'm going to go and I'm going to see. You know, if it's meant for me to be there, I'll get a sponsor and I will do it. So I went to the meeting, and of course you sit there and you listen, and I said, yeah, that's me. I know I'm a compulsive overeater. So I got a sponsor, and I started working the program and really enjoyed it and stuff. And then as being a retired woman, my husband and I said, I come, like I said, from Massachusetts, and I miss the beach. I love the beach. Grew up on the beach. And so I said, you know, I want to go to Florida. I said, I have some relatives there, and I said, I want to go to the beach, and, you know, in the winter, and I want to spend my winter, you know, our winter months there in Florida. So we had gone a couple of times to visit some relatives and did, like, one of the areas that one of my aunts lived. Unfortunately, he's passed away now, but my uncle's still there. Anyways, and so I went, we went to Florida, and I was doing the program, and then I don't know, God knows, probably Sheila's plan. Here's where we go, to Sheila's plan or God's plan. And I picked Sheila's plan, because I don't want anybody telling me what to do. Nobody. So then I took and I kind of phased out, you know, unfortunately. And so then finally, like I said, I was out of program for probably about a couple of years. Came back last May, and I said to myself, you know what? There is something missing in my life. Something's missing. I said, you know what I'm missing? I'm missing the spirituality of this program. Really missing the spirituality of the program. So I said to myself again, probably God's plan there. I said, you know what? I'm going to go back to the meeting, and I'm going to see. And you know, God, if you want me to be here, I'll get a sponsor, and I'll start working this program again. So I went, and some of the people that I knew from before were still there, and some of them were very successful. And there was one lady there that I had known her before, and I called her, and I said, would you be my sponsor? And she said, yeah, I will. So I started back up. So on June 12, 2012, I started back in program. And by the grace of God, I have a little over a year, 13 months. I don't know the days and the hours and the minutes and the seconds, but I did that. And then it was different this time. It was different coming back this time. This time it was like very much closer spiritual connection with my higher power, which I call God. Really a real close connection with God in my life. And I started back in, and my favorite thing was going anywhere. Every time I want to do something, go to any length. If you want this program, go to any length. It'll go in my mind, you know. And it's just been, it's been different. I find I'm very stronger, and probably the how of the program, you know, the how of the program. I mean, I'm open-minded more. And I find that what really works for me is that, you know, I get up every day and I swing my legs out after having the cancer. I had a little thing on my legs, so my knee, it was my knee and it was in my groin. And I swing those legs out and I say, thank you, God, for another day. And I say, please be beside me and help me arrest this disease just for today, because I only live this program one day at a time. That's all I do, because I don't know, I have no written guarantee for tomorrow. I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. But just for today, I work this program. I do what I have to do. And when I go to bed at night, I always find one positive thing in the day that I thank God for, and I thank Him for another day. You know, and as we say in program, you know, if it worked today, when you get up tomorrow, do it again. Do it again. You know, so I am just, you know, I'm just so grateful and, to have this. And then so I got on, so then I ended up, like I said, this time getting on the phone bridge, more on the phone bridge, especially going to Florida. There is meetings there, they're like about an hour or so away from me. So I got on the phone bridge, and then I heard Suzanne. It's funny because all we know each other is by our voices. And she heard on that thing, and I said, oh, she sounds so cute, so nice, you know. And then we kind of, you know, she's good because she's the type, Sheila, why don't you be an intergroup resident? Why don't you do this? You should do this. You should do that, you know? And, you know, she's really inspiring. She's very inspiring. And because of her, that's why I was in the fashion show, because I didn't think about that. She goes, "Well, why don't you do the fashion show?" I said, "Be good. He's good for you. Good." You know, so, but she's very inspiring, and I think we have formed a nice friendship, and that's the bonus. That's the bonus. You know, it isn't just we come in here and we're all acquaintances and we're never going to see each other again, hopefully, but we can connect. We can connect on the phone. That's where it's wonderful of people from all over. You get a chance to people from all over, not just, oh, I'm in Colorado, that's it. That's all you get. You know, and we do have 3 live meetings a week where I live in the Denver area. But I love the phone bridge. I just love it. And the most exciting thing for me has been, and even another, like I said, when I was in the other 12 steps, is coming to the convention and meeting people who you hear. Putting a voice with a face. Or putting a voice with a hug. You know, it's just, it's so endearing. It really is. It's wonderful. And thank God for Suzanne, I got my wonderful roommate, because I kept getting on the phone. This is Sheila. I need a roommate for the convention. Everybody's, I know you were looking for a roommate, weren't you? And this wonderful lady here called me. She says, "Sheila, do you have a roommate yet?" And I says, "No," because she kept saying, "Don't worry about it. You're going to get one. You're going to get one." And then she put me with my wonderful roommate and Brenda. And I said, "All right, tell her to call me." So she called me and we talked. And just by her voice, I said, "I like this person. All right, let's go. Let's be roommates." And we did it. It's been just a wonderful, wonderful journey and the beginning of a new friendship, I hope. So I'm just, you know, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. What can I say? I'm grateful for people's experience, strength, and hope. I'm grateful for people who work this program one day at a time, as I do. And that's how I learn. And I'm grateful if I can give back what I have been given, graciously been given. I always remember that in program. Give back what you've been given. That's why I say to people, too, when you get on the phone bridge or even in a meeting, you may not see people sometimes say, "Well, you know, what am I going to say? And what if I don't say something right?" And who, you never know when you say something to somebody, it's going to help somebody. It's going to help somebody. And I have to say, and I'm not trying to blow my horn here or anything, but I've had people call me, you know, and say, "Sure, you know, thank you so much. You shared that. Oh, I appreciate it. It really helped me. It's where I was at, and I needed to hear that." And, you know, and it makes me feel so good that I'm helping someone else. I'm not just inside myself and, I'm great. You know, it's just giving back and to touch people's lives. And that's what it is in this program to me, is to touch people's lives and help people, because my thing is, we're all in the same boat. We're all in the same boat. We're all the same goal. We want to be healthier. We want to take care of ourselves, because that's what a higher power wants us to do. And sometimes we take detours. Sometimes we take detours, and that's okay. But we're still in the same boat, going the same way. So I'm just grateful, and I thank you, Suzanne, for asking me to be here today and to help you.
Thank you, Sheila. Okay, we're going to read the promises, and then we're going to start talking about the promises. Sheila, would you please read the promises?
I sure will.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Okay.
All 3 of us, right?
No, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Okay, I'm going to read the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people or of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could never do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Ooh, whoa. Okay. All right. So,
I am going to go and share. I'd like my spiritual timekeeper for 10 minutes, please. Thank you. So by the time we get to steps 8 and 9, because that's what the promises are, kind of 9, but it's kind of, they're kind of connected. By the time we've gotten to this point in our journey here, we are wrapping up sort of getting to, quote-unquote, the maintenance steps. So by the time 8 and 9, we've worked steps 1, 2, and 3 and the other steps. And so we are getting ready to release what has gotten his fear, our resentments, our fears, our everything. So if we are painstaken, well, it might be painful, but the promises do tell us we will have a new way, a new outlook on life. So it's getting us ready, right? We've made the list of people, hopefully, during an inventory. If it's not complete, because sometimes we forget about things, we can add people. So step 8, you know, we are getting ready. We are getting ready. And then step 9 is we release all those resentments. We ask for amends. We are getting ready. And at the end it says, we didn't read that part. But that's okay. It says now we're going to step 10. Well, 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance things. So it's like we've done all this work for these past few months, or in my case, years. Took me years, but that's okay. We're getting to the point where we're really getting down the nitty gritty. And, you know, I did a inventory in my first program and my first abstinence in 1995. And I had made most of my amends by this. I've already done that. However, there was one that I thought I had really let go of. And by working this program, well, there were a couple. But the one was the things that my grandmother, my mother's mother, had done. And I had more than residue. Because I think it's like if we have a car and the car runs out of gas, the gas tank is empty, but there are fumes in that gas tank still. And we can live with those fumes, right? But this was more than the fumes. There was still a little bit of gasoline in that trunk, tank. And so by the time I got to step 8 and 9 in this program, I had really worked out my issues, and I was ready to let go. And I was willing to forgive. I was willing to set it free. It really is by reading this, and by the time you get to this in your journey, it makes sense. Because if you're new, I suggest everybody reads the big book as much as they can. It may not make as much sense, but when you think about it, you're like, okay, I did steps 1, 2, and 3, and I did 6 and 7, blah, blah, you know, 5 and 6, 6 and 7, 4 and 5, 6 and 7. Oh, yeah. This is where I get to make the list, and this is where I get to do the hard work, because this really is the hard work, making the list. Who do I put on the list? Do I put on the list someone I looked at funny? I don't know. Do you stare down people a lot? Maybe that should be on the list. Do you make amends for stealing as a child? Of course. You need to put that down on the list. And I remember one thing that I did as a child. I was 5. And I was made fun of a lot. In kindergarten, not quite as much. It was the older kids. Little kids didn't, but the older kids. And there was a little boy in my kindergarten class that had really large ears, and they stuck out, you know, like Dumbos. And all the little kids made fun of him. You know, they called him Dumbo or Dumbo Jumbo. That's what they called him. I don't remember his name. And I just went up to him, and I said, why do you have big ears? Well, the teacher told my mother that I was making fun of him, and, of course, I got into trouble for that because I was made fun of a lot. And my mother wanted me to be sensitive, so she marched me down to his house, had me march to his door. She said, I'm going to wait here while you apologize. I rang his doorbell. His mother answered. She knew why I was there. He came to the door, and I said, I'm sorry. The teacher said I made fun of you, but I think I hurt your feelings, and I didn't make fun of you, but I'm sorry I asked you because I think it hurt you. He said, well, no, you just asked me. The other kids really hurt my feelings. It's okay. You just asked me. But I learned, you know, I remember this. But see, why did I ask him? Because all the kids were teasing him. I probably would not have asked him. So I kind of fell into the group of, but I didn't do it, but I got my foot close to, you know, I was inching towards that. And it, you know, and I apologized. I said, I'm so sorry. And I don't remember his name. I remember what he looks like, but I can't remember the little boy's name. So I don't owe him an amends because I already did that. You know, my mom's like, okay. I took care of that one. But I remember that. So.
Would you want me to read that?
Yeah.
I didn't know we were going.
We're going to read, keep me on track here.
Yeah.
Promises 8 and 9.
Okay. So did you want me to do the step instead?
No, just read 8 and 9.
9? Okay. Okay. Just so we can reiterate ourselves. Okay. Step. Promise 8 is self-seeking will slip away. And 9 is our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change.
So
I'll read it one more time. Self-seeking will slip away. And 9 is our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change.
So if I'm holding on to, and I haven't gotten into my grandmother's stuff, if I'm holding on to stuff, I still have an outlook of life is rotten, life sucks, nobody likes me. I don't feel part of. I'm not good enough. Woe is me. I'm a victim. And I think, for me, I don't know if I felt so much a victim, but I did feel not part of. And if I wasn't careful, I could have so much, I really could have got into the victim mentality. And I know dealing with a lot of people in program, a lot of us do feel like victims. This is where we grow up. These two steps is where we really start to grow up and take accountability for what we have done and what people have done to us in the past, because we do have a part in even things that people have done to us. We have a part in it by holding on to grudges and resentments, you know, justifiable anger. Well, it says in the big book, we're not allowed to have justifiable anger. We're not. Because justifiable anger can still keep us in resentment. And I've learned that we need to be in gratitude, because when we're in gratitude, it is it's very difficult to stay angry or resentful. Not impossible. If you really want to be angry and resentful, even in gratitude, you can be. But it is very difficult. And so if I want to be in gratitude, I have to grow up. I have told a couple of my sponsees it's time to grow up lovingly, because someone said that to me. It's time to grow up, and it's okay to be an adult now. And I thought, I've been an adult all my life. Even, you know, I feel like I've been an adult since my father died. My father died when I was 9. But I really did get, actually, after I thought about it and prayed about it, I knew what they meant. I have to start taking responsibility for my actions. But not only my actions, my thoughts. So the promise of steps 8 and 9 is like gearing us up to, we need to let go of the past, because in order to you know, go forward, we need to let go of the past and clean up our side of the street. So that's what this is talking about. And it can be painful. But after the pain comes the relief. And I remember when I did my steps 8 and 9, there was a relief. There really, really was. So this is what we are talking about here, is that we need to get ready to be honest. Someone once told me they had 100 pages on their 8th step. I'm like, really? That's a bit much. Let's be honest and realistic. That is important, you know? Because, you know, if you overdo it, you can get stuck in step 8. Oh, no, I have to add this, and I have to add, what are you going to, no. We work the steps and move on. Like, in my case, I plead guilty. It took me a few years, but I did have an excuse. I really did. But I was still working the steps. You know, I realize that now, that by being blessed that I had the nerve to lead Homebridge meetings, and by doing 12-step meetings and Bigfoot meetings, and I was doing writing about those meetings and my discoveries during those meetings, I was working the steps. My sponsor said, don't you realize that just by writing about what you're discovering, okay, I'll wrap up. Just by talking and writing about those steps, you're working the steps with me. I'm like, okay, I don't feel so guilty now. So, Sheila is going to share 10 minutes.
10 minutes or less.
Yeah, 10 minutes on the promises.
Okay. Self-seeking will slip away and our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Because of this program, I get out of the me. You know, sin of me, you know, what you do to me, I don't like what you did to me, and get all that, you know. And today it isn't just worrying about me, it's worrying about you. It's worrying about helping you. But I know one thing I've realized through this program is I have to take care of me. Because if I don't take care of me, I can't help you. If I haven't walked the walk, I can't say, well, you should do da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, and you can't do that, you know. I have to be an example. That's why I have to work this program one day at a time, you know. And attitude, definitely. I mean, when I get that sugar and flour out of my head and the head is clear, then I can absorb. But if I don't do that, I'm like, that, you know, I think about the mouse in the wheel. You get a mouse and you get some that wheel and it keeps going around and around and around. Well, you know, that's how I feel I am, you know. And I think because of having, like I say, a very strong connection to my higher power, that my attitude, an attitude of gratitude today. One day at a time, attitude of gratitude. And it really, I am very, very grateful to have that, you know. And but it takes time. It isn't like, you know, whoop, you jump in here and okay, I'm doing what I need to do and all right, everything's fine and that's it, you know. Every day for me is I have to grow and learn in this program. That's what's important to me, is I grow and I learn. And how I learn from people's experience, strength, and hope in these rooms. That's how I learn. You know, I'm not alone. I have people who share my disease. And I always remember we used to say dis-ease. And sometimes it is a dis-ease, you know. But I learn and I grow. And I keep, like we say, an open mind. Open mind. It isn't, just like I had of the release of, it isn't Sheila's plan anymore. Because that never works. It's God's plan. It's God's plan. And if I sit down and I take a few minutes and I speak to God and I say, okay, let me know what it is that I need to do today. And it comes. It really does come. If we sit quiet, it really does come. And he shows me the way to do what I need to do for that day. So, to me, like I say, self-seeking, you know, I think 90% of life is attitude. That's my feeling. 90% of life is attitude. And then we have a choice. This one thing I like is I have a choice every day. Every day I get up, I have a choice. Do I live in the solution or do I not live in the solution? Do I want what the solution is going to give me or do I not want what the solution is going to give me? But you know, just for today, I picked to live in the solution. I want to be the winner. You know, to me, my disease is right here, right on my shoulder. And that's the devil. And the devil, to me, wants me to be the loser. God wants me to be the winner. So I have a choice. I have a choice every day. Do I feed into my disease or do I not feed into my disease? That's what my choice is, you know. But I know that if I don't feed into my disease and I do this program, I've got the better attitude, because you wouldn't want to live with me when I'm in the disease, I'll tell you. You wouldn't like me because I'm a miserable person. And it's amazing how we don't realize how my personality like that could change. Just like that. And the disease, just like that. You know, my poor husband, God love him, putting up with me all these years, I'll tell you. And, but, you know, but that's what it is, you know. I mean, it's the little things, you know, the little things in life, like you say, that make us happy. It's getting on the phone bridge and hearing someone share, or hearing someone talk, you know, about their lives and where they came from and where they are today. And how our whole world, it's like to me letting the sunshine in. When you open the windows in the morning, you know, and the sunshine comes in and you're all excited and getting that vitamin C. And it's just, the light broadens us. Light broadens my mind. It really does, you know, it broadens my mind. And, you know, and I have to take care of myself. That's what God tells me. So, Sheila, you need to take care of yourself today. Just for today, you got to take care of yourself. You got to walk the walk, not talk the talk, and I've done that many years of talking the talk. I can help the whole world, but I couldn't help me. I can help, I can get you going, I can help everybody, I can help you, but I didn't do it for myself. So I learned that, you know, like my husband says, how can you go say that to someone and tell them when you're not even doing it yourself? I said, oh, gosh, that's a hit in the face. Oh. And, you know, he's right. He's right. How can I say anything in life? How can I say something to you? You know, you go do this, you know, and I haven't done it myself. I'm not an example. You know, but through the promises, I can be an example. I can be an example. Like I say, I can show that my attitude is on the right road. It's on the right road, you know, just for today. So I'm going to end there, and I thank you for listening, and, now we're going to open it for Sharon.
Could you please read the promise 8 and 9? Yes. And I have yes. 1 minute quickie share that I will do, yes. And we'll open it up.
Okay.
Before we go on to the next part.
Okay. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change.
Timekeeper, I need 2 minutes, please. So, that part is important because before I'd gotten to these steps, it talks about in other places in the Big Book, we're selfish and self-centered. Not so much selfish, definitely self-centered, especially when I'm into the disease. When I'm into the disease, it's always about me. Somebody didn't call me back, I did something, he doesn't like me, she doesn't like me. Why don't they call me back? When I went to church and they did ask me to join a group, they don't like me because I'm blind. They, you know, don't think enough of me. They don't think I'm capable. It was always about me. I'm a compulsive eater, so I'm very sensitive. And you have the fact that I'm blind and I'm, you know, hypersensitive. God help anybody, you know. And it was all about me. I could be very caring about people, and I took care of my mom. I took care of her. I did. I learned to be her caregiver, and not to be the caretaker, but there were times I did need to be the caretaker. But it was always about me. Okay, so I've gotten to the point of, oh, it's not about me. I have learned not to assume, and I have learned most likely, most of the time, it's not about me. Now, I have to look about what my part is, because sometimes I did something and it is about me. But I have to be honest, because I can slip back into the disease about I did something wrong. I have to be realistic and be grounded to look at this objectively. Did I do anything? And if not, then it's not about me, and I gotta let it go. I really do. And that is where the promises come true. I have learned to turn it over to God. It's not all about me. Most likely in the past it wasn't about me either. That was my sick brain and my soul sickness at work. Today I know that. And that is what I've learned. That's what I've gotten to step 8 and 9 and going into step 10, getting into step 10. I get it today. I get it. It is not about me. Hallelujah. Time. So, would somebody like to, we'd like people to come up for 2 minute shares, Ms. Timekeeper. about how these two, the self-seeking, Sheila just read, how are you working this? What has happened to you? Would anybody like to come up and share on that on the mic, but you have to sign in?
I'm Lorraine, compulsive eater. The self-seeking will slip away really spoke to me a lot. We all make the jokes, I'm sure you've heard it in every meeting, is the cleaner I got from the food and the more that I grew in the program, the nicer all of you became. You know? And we've all made the comments about how it's amazing how well our husbands or our family, our kids or whatever, came through this program with us, you know, and we all know that they really didn't change, but we changed. And I do think that the program helped me to quit being the victim, the martyr, or whatever else it was that I was doing within my disease, and to see that I can be there for someone else. And I'm grateful for that part.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you so much for sharing.
Hi, my name is Edie. I'm from New York. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Edie.
They may not be directly related to all this, but for me, the most important part in this program was the fact that I was able to share anything and everything and know that nothing would go out of the rooms and that people in the fellowship were just non-judgmental. And at the beginning, when Sheila spoke about how sometimes people are afraid of what somebody's going to think, that maybe you'll say something silly or stupid. Well, when I was in school, I don't always present as a shy person, but I am a very shy person deep down. And in school, I was always afraid to ask a question in class because I was always so scared that everybody would just make fun of what I said and, oh, what a stupid question. And how many times did it get kicked back at me that the smartest girl in the class asked my very same question, and I kicked myself inside, like, why didn't I have the courage to just get up and do it? But this is how I was throughout my life. I never had enough, I always felt, I guess, somewhat self-conscious, inferior, or that whatever I'm going to say is just stupid, and there's going to be somebody who's going to come back at me and say, and just tease me about it. But in these rooms, I found that no matter what I share, no matter what I say, everyone is just so accepting and non-judgmental. And so many times I see people nodding their head that, yeah, me too. And I'll never forget when I was explaining my compulsivity and I started talking about, I would come home and say, before program, there's nothing in the house to eat, and I open the cupboards and slam the cupboards and open the cupboards, and everybody else is going like, yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm not alone. I found a place where I belong. And for this, I am so forever grateful.
When I started to think about how to answer this, there's so many ways that self-seeking has dropped away in my life. And it has nothing to do with my own perfection or desire to be perfect or desire to be loved or anything. It's a whole new way for me. So I wonder if anyone else knew this story, Princess and the Pea?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she was uncomfortable because there was a pea under her mattress. So they added another mattress, and that still didn't work. And after, 30, 40 mattresses, well, I was 52, so I had a whole lot of mattresses up there when I came to program because I was this princess in the pea. I thought that the world was kind of just not as fair to me as maybe other people. And I used all sorts of techniques to overcome that. And I never knew what I was doing until I came to this program. And I started reading those first three steps, started explaining this to me, that I would at times try to overdo and at times I would underdo because of this feeling, and that it wasn't true, that I was being treated just the way everyone else was being treated. It was me wanting to be special, wanting to be treated well, instead of wanting to be a part of. And so see how it has changed the way I look at everything. And the most recent thing I'm doing is, because I grew up with this judgmental spirit, is when I walk around, I used to people watch. Okay, now I'm people watching, but instead of thinking something negative, I'm forcing myself to think something that I like or something that impresses me or something positive about that person, and it's changing things. So thanks.
So, would anyone else like to come up?
Marva. From Compton.
Thank you, Marva.
California girl.
Yes, I am. I'm almost just around the corner here, and I am so grateful that this convention is so close. I have no excuse for not being here. I can't remember the young lady that just spoke there.
Jill.
She really, really rung a bell in my head. Because I've always felt less than. I've always felt that I was the biggest thing in the room. And they were looking at me. That my clothes were too tighter. I had to wear the same thing over and over again because I couldn't fit into anything else. So all I had was one or two outfits to wear. I am so thankful and grateful this morning. I can say that through this program, I have been able, or the program has allowed me to get pounds off of me where I no longer have to take Byetta injections for my diabetes. And when you say amazed, because I had been diabetic too for quite a few years, and I had fooled around with the medicine and everything else, you know. I don't know, you know, my thinking. But see, when I'm in the food, I think completely different. And what I would do is I'd eat and then I would run and take the medicine, thinking it would counteract it. And it didn't. It didn't. But, you know, this program has really, really opened my eyes. It has made me a better person. No, I'm not where I would like to be, and I'm looking forward to be, because I still have a lot of weight to lose. But the weight in between my ears, Lord Jesus, that's what's coming off, you know, and that's what I need, okay? I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I'm 72 years old. I want my senior years to be my best years, and I know I'll have that if I continue to stay in health.
Yay! Anyone else?
I don't know how you follow that. Thanks, Sheila. Get a little church in. That's great. I've been in church at all this morning. So I'm Sheila. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Sheila.
And thank you, Suzanne, and thank you, Sheila, for a wonderful workshop. This is great. I love thinking about those promises. And I think, for me, when I think about how my outlook on life has changed, is that, and it makes sense for me then that it shows up, you know, after I do that ninth step, that those promises start coming in. And for me, it's not like there was any God in the heavens who then says, okay, you've done enough work, let me bestow this stuff on you. It's really that my heart opened, you know, and I think that's the outlook on my life that has changed, is that I just don't have to be a victim anymore, and I never have to point out anything that you're not doing anything wrong. You're doing everything just fine. And I'm always very conscious of the fact when I'm not late, you're all driving fine. And, so it's things like that. Like if I just look at what's going on in my life, you know, just not long ago, just earlier this week, I'd gone into a convenience market and parked, and a big truck came in, and it was from a charity. And it's a charity that I've supported in the past, which just felt like rubbing salt in the wound. And he parked in a way, he kind of parked so that no, you know, a bunch of us couldn't get out. A bunch of us. I think there was two, but it was me. So it feels like that was, you know, me. Right? And I thought, well, I'm going to go get the license plate on the truck, and I'm going to call the charity, and, you know, so I did. I got out of my car, right? And you know, can't just sit there and wait patiently, God forbid. So I get the number, and I'm, you know, looking at the number, and I'm going to call the charity, and then I think, well, I'm going to go in the market. I thought, oh my God, there's going to be a showdown, right? I'm going to go in the market. And I go in, and he's there, and he's kind of laughing and chatting, and, you know, God took over, and I just said, you know, actually, thank you, are you the one that has the truck out there? And he said, oh, I do, I'm sorry. And like, wham, it was gone. and, you know, got in my car and left, and I thought, well, I should still call anyway. And I thought, let it go. You're out of the spot. So I'm just very, very grateful. That's how it shifted. You're doing everything fine, and you know what? So am I. So great. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm Janine,
okay.
And I'm ready to go, girl.
So we're going to end with Janine, and then we're going to read 8 and 9.
And we'll have more. It's really good that we get a chance to all speak.
Thank you. My attitude and outlook on life has changed. It's changing. I like to realize that it's a gradual thing and still happening in many ways. But one thing that's really been coming to me in the last few days is that sometimes the pain that I experience in dealing with my character defects is a blessing, and that overcoming these things gives me tremendous joy and satisfaction, which is totally against everything I tried to do all my life. I didn't want to feel any pain, any sorrow, any sadness, any loneliness. I just tried to escape from all that and mask that. And today I am, oh, this doesn't feel really good. Okay. Thank you, God, for the opportunity to learn what I need to learn through this. Talk about a whole new way of looking at life. Oh, it's, and I'm not there yet, but I'm at least recognizing, this is painful, and if I stick with it and work through it, I will get tremendous satisfaction from that, and I will really feel the love that God intends for me to feel through this pain, and that's beautiful to me. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay, we're going to read step 8 in your 12 and 12 book, which I love. It's the content part of it. It gives us a lot of things to think about. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. This and the next two steps are concerned with personal relations. Learning to live with others is a fascinating adventure. Obstacles, reluctance to forgive, non-admission of wrongs to others, purposeful forgetting, necessity of exhaustive survey of past, deepening insight results from thoroughness, kinds of harm done to others, avoiding extreme judgments, taking the objective view. Step 8 is the beginning of the end of isolation.
So, we made our list when we did the inventory. But then we're doing our questions. We have these wonderful questions and say how, and sometimes other, because the questions might bring up something, we may have added people to our list, right? Who should be on that list? So in my case, as I said, I've made a lot of amends to people in my past, but there are a few people that popped up on the list that I thought I had resolved. I needed to forgive, you know, my grandmother. I needed to forgive my father's brother. And I need to forgive my brother. I had done something, the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And I remember telling my sponsor, she said, is that all? But it is something horrible. To kind of sever the relations of my mother's mother with my mother and myself, I'm going to make this really short. You don't need all the details right now. I was living in Mexico, and I wrote and told my grandmother that my mother had died, because I knew she was coming down to visit, and my mother didn't want anything to do with her. That was not my business to do that, okay? I was not in program then. I told my mother, and she said, oh, that was horrible, but she laughed about it, you know? She said, it's better for you to find out now what's going to happen than later. And, yeah, I mean, my grandmother, what can I tell you? So I did that. So, you know, I had to make amends to my mom. I did that. But I needed to forgive my grandmother for all the things she had done to me, and I needed to ask her to forgive me for having done that, because that was not my place. It was not my right. I really should not have done that. My mother said it was probably better that I did, but it was not my place to have done that. But because of that, my brother had thought that my mother died. I had asked him to forgive me a long time ago, and he did. And so I thought that I needed to ask his forgiveness still. You know, please, I make amends, you know, if you can forgive me. It wasn't that. By this time that I've gotten to this step, I needed to forgive him for abandoning my mother and me. And I, in my case, because of the family history and other things, my sponsor and I spoke about this, and I prayed about it, and she said, you don't have to. I tried to look for him in the past, but he doesn't want to be found, okay? I've not spoken to him since 1986. And throughout the years, for a couple of medical reasons, we tried looking for him. He didn't want to be found. So, I can't write. At least I can write, but I don't know if anybody can read it. Especially when I'm writing in my journal, because that stuff is meant for God and for me. But I did do a cassette. I wrote him a letter, and I thought, oh, this is going to be an angry letter. I didn't want it to be an angry letter, but I thought, you know, it might turn out that way. I don't want it to be that way, because this is for me. When we get ready to make, this is step eight, we're getting ready though, right? So I thought, how am I going to do it? So my sponsor said, I want you to write a letter to him, and you'll do it on a cassette, and then you will play it for me, and then we'll do it from there. Okay. So that's what I figured out that I needed to forgive him. I already asked him to forgive me long ago, and I was sincere in that, and he did, but I needed to forgive him. To make the list of the people we've harmed, yeah, but we also make a list, and we need to get ready to forgive people, because that resentment will kill us. And it keeps us small, it keeps us from growing, and it keeps us from moving on. You know, it talks about we don't get stuck in the past. You know, and I heard, I can't claim responsibility for this. If I keep looking in the rearview mirror of my car while I'm driving, well, that'll be a laugh if I were driving. if I keep, maybe I could do a better job than some people, you know, I don't know. Here she comes, you know. I'm going to get one of those Google cars, you know, drive for me. But if I keep looking, if I have my eyes constantly on the rearview mirror, I'm going to crash my car. If I'm driving, you know, at worst or best, I'm not going to move the car. I'm just going to get stuck to where I am, or I'm going to crash the car. The rearview mirror is for us to look back, just, you know, make sure we're safe, and glances back, you know, like, okay, that's there, that's there. But I need to have my eyes focused forward. Oh, on the highway of life here, I need to look forward and not so much backwards. I'm fond of telling my sponsors, and I learned this from my sponsor, so what have you learned from this, and what can you do better? And so in my case, what have I learned, what can I do better? So I'm making my list. And Sheila, would you like to make a share on making a list? How do you prepare?
Okay, I don't love step eight and step nine. I'll be honest with you. And it takes a lot of thought. It takes a lot of thought. Like when we say who we harmed, sometimes we don't know who we harmed. Sometimes we do. And I think it's scary. I'm going to say for me it's scary. Scary to, you know, to make a list. But, you know, the first thing I thought of when I thought of making a list, I had to make a list to myself. I had to make a list to make an amend to my body, what I've done with my body all these years with my drug of choice, food. And I really, that's how I think I had to begin it, is to look at who I am, why did I do this, because I have a disease. Have a disease, and food was my friend. I love my food. Food was my friend, but what did I do with the food? I stuffed the feelings. You said boo the wrong way, boom. I didn't like what you looked at me the way, boom. You know, everything, I would stuff all the emotions and all the feelings so I didn't have to feel it. Of course, I was miserable after, unfortunately. I was miserable after I did that. You know, but that's all I did all my life, and I harmed my body. I'm lucky. I mean, another reason of coming into a 12-step program, to be honest with you, diabetes runs on both sides of my family. I have a choice. I don't want to live that life. I've seen people lose their legs and their arms and whatever because of diabetes and stuff. And I didn't want to do that, so I said, okay, what do I need to do? I need to work a program. You know, and that's what I need to do. And that's the amends of saying, okay, I think of, and like you were saying, I think of my body as a car. If I don't put the fuel in, it ain't going anywhere. So I got to fuel it. How do I fuel it? I fuel it with the food. But the healthy foods, the good foods, the enjoyable foods, you know? And that's what I do. So if I do that, then I'm actually taking an action. I'm taking an action to do an amend in a way. So that to me was the first thing. And then I felt the only other one I really felt that I had to make amends to is to my husband. To my husband, because, like I say, he's put up with me. I love the man. We'll be married, God willing, 45 years in January. And, you know, he's my biggest fan. He's my biggest help. He says to me, I've thought about him coming to the convention for Saturday night and stuff. And then I said, he says, no, he says, you don't want me to come. He says, because I'll be running around to everybody saying, did you call your sponsor? Did you call your sponsor? He does that to me here. Did you call your sponsor? And I don't know what it is. I get like I change the time and it's like craziness. And I said, well, thank you for telling me. Go call my sponsor now, you know. So he's laughing about that, you know. But that's because he loves me when I'm in program. He loves me more. Loves me more, I'll say, because he always loves me. Loves me more when I'm in program. So that to me is the biggest thing to me, is to really sit down and think about who do I really have to make amends to. And some people are gone. And I should say that, thank God. Some people are gone. And I don't have to, you know. But I do have to make the amends for myself. For myself. For my own psyche. So that's what I do. I sit down and maybe think about who I have to make amends to. Okay, the next step is, why do I think I have to make amends? What did I do? What defect did they bring out in me because of the way maybe they said something to me, whatever. And like my sponsor says, you do it for yourself. You don't do it for them, you do it for yourself. So that's all I can share on step eight. Do you want to do step nine now?
Yes. Okay. We're gonna
read step nine. Okay. May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. A tranquil mind. I love that. A tranquil mind is the first requisite for good judgment. Good timing is important in making amends. What is courage? Prudence means taking calculated chances. And we do take a chance. We do take a chance. Amends begins when we join CEA Howe. Peace of mind cannot be bought at the expense of others. Need for desecration, readiness to take consequences of our past and to take responsibility for well-being of others in spirit of step nine.
Okay, so we figured out, hopefully, who we need to make amends to and made our list. So I kind of figured out who I needed to make amends to during the inventory, but I added a couple of people after the inventory process. I needed to, I figured out how I was going to make the amends to my brother, so I needed to do that. So I did that on cassette and read it to my sponsor. And actually, it was a very nice letter. I mean, it was very loving, because I have to be honest. And I thanked him. The brother that I had until the age of 13, that's the brother that I knew, that's the brother that I love, and that's the brother that I needed. And that's who I have in my life, the brother that I had. I do not know my brother of today, and that's okay. So the letter that I wrote to him was actually really nice. I needed to say some things, but I also needed to tell him that I did love him. And it was very, very, very liberating to be able to just say it, read it to my sponsor, and then turn it over to God. So I did that. I needed to make amends, not only make amends, I needed to forgive my very first sponsor, my first program, because I did feel, because I was still new, I was losing my eyesight, and she did not, she didn't really believe that I was losing my eyesight, and that's okay, now I can understand that. She really didn't believe it, and so she really was very, very hard on me about why I wasn't doing more service. I was still doing service, but she expected me to be in the group every day doing service because I was single and I could. And when I couldn't get to meetings, she didn't understand it, and I was shamed inside the rooms and shunned and put down. I was. And so I needed to forgive her, but I also needed to ask forgiveness because the way I reacted to her affected the group. And it did. Because when she did this, and I was so hurt, I had people leave the rooms because of how she treated me and how I responded to it. Never should have happened. So I needed to apologize for the way I reacted, the way that I treated the situation, for the turmoil that I caused in the situation. And I needed to forgive her because I also realized she didn't know how to deal with the situation. And so I called her. I forgave her. I then said, but the most important reason why I called is because I'm making amends for how I dealt with it and how I reacted and how I affected the group. And we both cried about it. She then asked me to forgive her because she said, I didn't believe that you were losing your eyesight. I didn't believe you. And she said, when you called me and told me you lost your eyesight, she said that she was devastated. She was so full of shame and guilt. Having been around a little bit, I know that we are all compulsive eaters, and we can all relate on that level. I cannot expect the normies, or they think they're normies, out there to understand our disease. I can't. I can't expect someone to understand what it is to be blind or be in a wheelchair. You can't. However, I can certainly today have compassion and empathy. I don't exactly have to understand it, but I can be caring. That's what this, when I've gotten to this step, this is what gave me, this is what this has been given to me. So I made those amends to her and to the group, which was really important. The other thing that how I made amends is I had a couple of goddaughters that I was helping raise when I was mostly in my disease. I have to... Okay. So I made amends, you know, to how I dealt with my goddaughters because I was in my disease. So what I did was, I'm very lucky that I wasn't really in my disease that much, but I have changed my phone plan so I can call them and be there for them. I'm also doing that for a friend who's very ill, and I don't know how much time he has left. I can't go to see him, I don't think. He's he's, you know, in Mexico, but I can make a living amends by being there. I think it is time to close.
No.
Okay. So, we can make amends by different ways. We can either do it in person, if it's not going to be harmful to us, okay, or to others. We can make amends other ways. I want to give a couple of examples. If you stole something as a child or an adult, and you can't give the amends back directly to the store, and one of my sponsors has taught this to me, you can find out what charity they have and make a contribution to that charity. What if you don't have any money? You know, you're like, okay, I don't have any money, but I need to make those amends. How about volunteering for that charity? Right? We can do that. So there are different ways of making those amends. If you have children or a husband or a mother, make living amends by being of service to them when you can. Obviously, you can go overboard on that, but we can make a living amends on a daily basis by being loving and caring and being of service. And the other way of making a living amends is by practicing our program, our principles, steps, and traditions in all of our affairs, and that means with our personal relationships. And now I give you Sheila.
Thank you, Suzanne. May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so and injure them or others. And I love that. A tranquil mind is the first requisite for good judgment. It's true. If my mind is not peaceful and things, I can't think. I can't think. And I'll put this in, my thinking won't be the greatest. And I think if you're making amends to someone in person, I think it's very important how we express it. You know, is the way of saying, like, if I was giving Suzanne the example, I said to Suzanne, for instance, you know, I really don't like your attitude, or you know, Suzanne, what happened? Suzanne, you know, the other day in the situation we were talking, and I said that to you, but you know, I didn't mean it maybe the way it came across or the way she took it. And I'm really sorry if what I said hurt you, but I was saying it, I thought, in a kind way. But it just depends on your really, the sound of your voice and how you say it. You know what I mean? There's a way of saying to someone, you know what, Lorraine, I think you look better. I could say, Lorraine, I think you look better in black than you do in red. You know, I could say to her, you know what, Lorraine, I think that red is such a complimentary color to you, you know, with your skin and your hair and everything. It's how we say it. How we say, how it's perceived, That's the thing too. You say, especially on the phone. You know, we're on the phone. Nobody sees me. Thank God, because sometimes I'm not even got my hair done, or I've got my nightgown on, or whatever I'm doing. But it is how a sound of our voice. That's all we do. We share. It's just the sound of our voice. You know, and this is how we listen. See, so between the sound of our voice and hearing. This is it, you know, we're hearing it, you know. That is what, you know, that's what telling. So for us, we take people at face value. We take people at face value. Sometimes it's positive, maybe sometimes it's negative, but you know, that's where they're at, God bless them, wherever they are in their program. Not everybody, you know, is a woo woo, as we said, you know. But I mean, that's it. But the way we present ourselves, the way we say things, you know, and I had an incident happen to me that my future daughter-in-law, who's my daughter-in-law now, it was before the wedding, and I came here early. My son lives in California. I came here early to help out. I said, you want me to come and help you, you know. He said, oh, yeah, no, I appreciate that. So I come there, and him and I go to Costco and get all the stuff, and then we'll walk in the door with hands with stuff that has to go in the refrigerator. Well, my future daughter-in-law started screaming. And I mean screaming, four-letter words, and screaming at us. And so I turn around and I say, excuse, and she just had a miscarriage. So I turn around and I said, excuse me, you shouldn't be moving your desk. I mean, you know, in your condition, you know, trying to be nice. Yeah? Well, all she heard me say was, excuse me. And she went at me with three barrels. And she was like, now I see how your mother is. I see her true color. And I kept going on and on and on. It ends up, and then all your mother cares about is her daughter and your grandson. That's all she cares about. It just went on and on and on. And unfortunately, I did a one boo-boo. I walked over and I pointed. And I said to her, calm down. What's that? So, anyway, so to make a long story short, I spoke to my sponsor. And my sponsor said, Sheila, you have to make an amends. And boy, did I not want to make an amends. I wanted to really lay her out in lavender. But you have to make amends. Not for her, for yourself. For yourself, not for her, for your psyche. So we go to the wedding. And after the wedding's over, they're standing back there. So I walk over, and I said, I'm sorry for what happened. I said, I hope it'll be smooth sailing ahead. No reaction at all. No reaction at all. And then we went to the reception they had in their apartment. Went there, we walk in, all of us, and I have two sons and a daughter. And we walk in, and, you know, my husband's trying to be nice. He says, oh, he says, you know, congratulations and all that. She never spoke to me, to my husband, to my daughter, to my son, my daughter-in-law and my little grandson. Never said one word to us the whole night. You know, and then I stay with my son. We help clean up and stuff and all that. It just, it's still, and it's getting worse and worse, to be honest with you. It's really getting worse because I feel I do deserve an apology. Not saying I'm perfect, but I do, because it should have never happened to begin with. But anyway, so it's, you know, it's, I said, oh, yeah, I got the daughter-in-law from hell now. Oh, God. And you know what? I turned around and I said, you know what it is? I prayed to God. I did. I prayed to God and I said, please let my son find somebody so he's not alone in his life. So now I'm getting it. I'm getting it. Careful what you pray for, as they say, boy, because you don't know. And now she is pregnant again, and we'll see what happens. But so that's the whole story. But anyways, but, you know, I'm learning, like you say, we say amends for ourselves. We have to say the amends for ourselves, you know. And but my mom's passed away, and that's a whole different, a whole big subject. And I couldn't make an amends to her. I really couldn't, and unfortunately. And, but, you know, that's it. So, anyways, that's how I kind of do it. And, like I say, you know, it's a big step. I mean, I think about taking that giant step. That's what it is doing 8 and 9, you know, that giant step ahead. Okay.
So, in recapping, if let's say someone has died, because in my case, my grandmother passed on, and I tell my sponsees to do this too, write them a letter, make amends for a letter, and when you pray, you know, pray, please God, you know, I'd like, so we can still do that. Also, you know, we do have to be careful to make direct amends. Sometimes it is not a good idea to do it directly. You can do a letter and not send it. Some people mail it to themselves or just give it over to God. There's that. And, you know, you do have to be careful. But we can always make amends in different ways. And even if, like I said, if they've gone, you can still do it because I did it. And it's actually really nice. Once I did it, I felt, oh, the other thing is, sometimes we make amends. And in a few cases, the people said, we don't even know what you're talking about, but thank you. Sometimes you won't get a reaction at all. That's okay, because once again, as Sheila said, who are you doing it for? Yeah, it'd be nice if the other person would respond in a positive way. You may not get that. You may get total silence, or you may get, I don't forgive you. That does happen. And I have been told that you do it, throughout time, you do it 3 times, and after that, you let it go. And I have heard of a case, someone I was working with, they did it over a 10-year period. The third time, the person said, I do not forgive you, I hate you, blah, blah, blah. My sponsee was really devastated, and I said, you know, this is where we turn over to God. You cleaned up your side of the street. Now it's up to God. And like 2 years later, the person that she needed to make amends to and the person wouldn't accept came to her and said, I forgive you. Can you forgive me? So sometimes that doesn't happen either. The person may pass and there's you may feel it's unresolved. But, you know, like in the letter that I wrote to my brother, I said, you know, there's stuff that needs to be resolved. And on a physical level, it's too late because my mom is now gone, but it's never too late. It really isn't. And I said, if you need to do that, you know, that's between you, God, and our mother. So it's never too late, no matter what happens. But sometimes, so don't expect, please don't do this expecting an apology. Because I was taught, you do this for you. You do not do it to, like, expect an apology. When I did it with my first sponsor, I did not expect an apology. I got one. It was great. So there are different ways of doing it. And if your sponsor, if you have a different situation, figure it out. If you can't figure it out, we have a lot of people in program. A lot of good suggestions and outreach calls, because there are a lot of people that have been around a long time. And
no, we don't. No, so we're gonna kind of close in. I just want to just say that thank you all for being here this morning. I hope we've given you some food for thought. And I appreciate all you being here. And I think it would be nice for us to end with the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change,
courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. I will,
not mine,
be done.